You either made it back from the Word Irish Music Archive or made it here, depending on your personal situation. This morning, we'll be starting off with a session on various significant figures in the early recording industry, beginning with Nathaniel Shilkret, a name that I'm sure is familiar to most of you. Our first presenter's name, in fact, Neil Shell, is short, a shortened version of Nathaniel Shilkret, since he's named after his grandfather and the subject of this presentation, Nathaniel Shilkret. Neil Shell is a professor of mathematics at the City College of New York and has written or edited two books and about 30 research articles on mathematics. He was the editor for Nathaniel Shilkret's autobiography and is currently editing a Nathaniel Shilkret Victor discography compiled by Brian Rust. So I'm pleased to introduce to you Neil Shell.
I actually wasn't prepared for such early rises, so I thought I'd play some music as people would walk in, and then when they came in, I'd say, oh, here's the music you've just heard is a 1937 recording by Igor Gorin with an accompaniment by orchestra director Nathaniel Shilkret of a Ukrainian folk song. I'm going to talk about foreign recordings. But you're here already, so I will play the music and then we'll start the presentation. Oh. That is, I think I'll play the music. Issued as Victor Red Seal 4328, recorded January 1937. I'd like to begin my presentation by considering the question of, were early foreign recordings made in the United States largely dominated by a few giants, or were there just a a very large number of foreign artists making a moderate number of recordings each. For clarification, early for use of existing data will mean before the 1942 Petrillo ban. Foreign will mean issued either outside the United States or issued in the United States primarily for a foreign-speaking or ethnic group. What constitutes a recording requires a little bit more thought. If it required 8 takes to get a satisfactory recording, one might reasonably either say that's 1 recording or 8 recordings. But in fact, I'm not going to count it either way. I'm going to count the number of distinct calendar days on which the takes were made, again, for ease of use with existing data. Would one want to count trials, transcriptions, air checks? Yes, they will. An obvious source of information for early foreign recordings would be Dick Spotswood's Ethnic Music on Record. It consists of about 3,000 pages with an average of perhaps slightly over 20 entries per page, accounting therefore for perhaps 60 to 70,000 entries. Glancing through the table of contents of Ethnic Music on Record, one sees that it requires less than 20 pages to list all of the recordings for any particular artist. And at a little over 20 per page on average, that probably puts an upper bound of at most 400 recordings by any particular artist listed in the discography. However, if you look in the back of the discography in the artist index, you'll see that there are a few artists that have so many entries that the number of pages, the number of lines in the index needed to list all the pages is very large. In particular, there are 6 entries that require more than 15 lines, just to list the number of pages on which the artist or group appears. And these, together with the 2 runners-up, appear on the screen now. So one sees, for example, it took 58 lines in the index to list all of the pages on which recordings by Nathaniel Shilkret were made. For King's Orchestra, 33 lines. For Leroy Shield, 31 lines. Anton Sabelli, 28 lines. Rosario Bordan, 25 lines. Eddie King, 18 lines. And the runners-up, Bruno Reibold, 15 lines. And Eduardo Vigili Robles, 12 lines. Some of you may at this point see why I was permitted to talk at this conference with a Victorian theme. Since, in fact, all of these are Victorians. Well, after 1929, RCA Victorians. More precisely, King's Orchestra was the house orchestra for foreign recordings from approximately 1915 to 1920. And all of the other names on the list were Victor House conductors. The 58 lines in the index for Nathaniel Shilkret translate to about just over 1,700 entries in the discography. And if one assumes that the number of entries in the discography is proportional to the number of lines in the index, an estimate is obtained that perhaps 8 to 10% of all listings in the Ethnic Music on Record were from the Victor House Orchestra. And in particular, also, all of the people who were listed as directors, they also sometimes played in the orchestra. So sometimes there was some duplication in the sense that Eddie King was a director and Nathaniel Shilkret clarinet, and who knows, maybe even at the same time, Rosario Bordan on the piano. But anyway, the conclusion I would say is among early ethnic recordings or foreign recordings, there's one and only one giant among artists, and that was the Victor House Orchestra. And by far the most prolific of the recorders was Nathaniel Shilkret. Get a little bit of ad for his autobiography in there. As many as it sounds for 1,700 recordings by Nathaniel Shilkret, that underestimates actually the number of foreign recordings he made for at least 4 reasons. First, in the listing, there was just King's Orchestra with no director named. Somebody had to direct and some people played in it. And in particular, I believe that a large number of these recordings where there's no name listed included Nathaniel Shulkert either as director or a player or in some cases also an arranger. Second, the Ethnic Music on Record systematically does not list instrumental foreign recordings by house orchestras, and Nathaniel Shulkert conducted many such recordings. Third, in the Ethnic Music on Record, many recordings for to be sent to Central and South America are not listed, and again, Nathaniel Shulkert made many of these. In his autobiography, Nathaniel Shulkert says that he was hired in the foreign department but also asked to help out in the export department. And he explains that the foreign department in Victor was responsible for the foreign recordings issued within the United States, whereas the export department was responsible for, as he put it, recordings to go south of the border, that is to Central and South America. Many people know the International Novelty Orchestra for its 100-plus dance recordings, as chronicled, for example, in Brian Rust's American Dance Band discography. However, the group, which was created in November 1921 by Nathaniel Shulkert, was largely used for foreign recordings. And the Victor files include approximately 500 sheets with listings of the International Novelty Orchestra export recordings. A sample of one of these sheets is here. Of these recordings, those counting the number made before the end of October 1926, when Nathaniel Shulkert was promoted to director of light music at Victor and ceased his activity primarily as a foreign recording artist, there were about 650 recordings listed in these sheets for the International Novelty Orchestra for the Export Department. And of these, approximately 400 were directed by Nathaniel Shulkert. Fourth exclusion is as follows. Nathaniel Shulkert reports that he came to Victor about mid-1915, yet the earliest entry for Nathaniel Shulkert in the Ethnic Music on Record is for November 1917, 2.5 years later. Search by Brian Rust for early recordings turned up only one earlier recording, a trial in April of 1917. I'm fairly certain that the situation was not that Nathaniel Shulkert made one recording between mid-1915 and end of 1917, but rather that he simply didn't get listed in the Victor sheets. Taking into account these four omissions from the Ethnic Music on Record, I would estimate from the data here that the number of Shulkert foreign recordings was actually in excess of about 2,600. In fact, I have a separate source of information for Shulkert recordings, as was mentioned when I was introduced. Brian Rust has drafted a Shulkert Victor discography. The first draft has about 5,300 items, and I estimate that by comparing with other discographies, this on the first try, we've picked up about 85 to 90% of what's actually in the files. Of these entries, those dating before the end of October 1926 amount to about 3,800 entries. And of these, I've gone through and just made an estimate, and I'm not sure that my count is correct, about 700 of these are not foreign recordings. Someone comes up with a figure of 3,100 documented recordings. Adding to this that I think we're only about 85 to 90% of the way so far, and that the first 2.5 years of his 10.5 years as a foreign recording artist didn't make it into the Victor sheets, one ends up with an estimate of perhaps in excess of 4,000 Shulkert foreign recordings. And the influence of Nathaniel Shulkert on foreign recordings went beyond the recordings that he actually made himself. from his autobiography about his executive duties and A&R duties. I'll just read a brief quote. There were 12 dates a week, 48 separate titles, and about 200 records per month to be filled out. Foreign artists and their repertoire had to be discovered. With other companies competing, it was necessary to attend Polish weddings and affairs, Jewish theaters, Italian vaudeville, German cafes, etc. Sometimes meeting immigrants arriving in America for concert tours. It was a hectic department, and I found little time for sleep. He had a reputation for being able to survive consistently on 2 to 3 hours sleep. His duties as executive in Victor also included matching the music with the artist. So between finding the artist and matching the music with the artist, he shaped the Victor Foreign Department, not just the recordings that he made himself, but all of the Victor recordings, all of the Victor Foreign recordings. Well, having made my case about Nathaniel Shulker being probably the dominant figure for early foreign recordings, I'll give a brief a biographic sketch of Nathaniel Shulker. He was born on Christmas Day in 1889, although for most of his life he said publicly, at least, that he was born January 1st, 1895. He was a child prodigy, appearing from ages 7 to 13, that would be about 1897 to 1903, as a clarinet soloist in a boys' orchestra. Here's a picture of a feature article from April 1902 showing the boys' orchestra, and if I can show in the upper right-hand corner, the soloist, clarinet soloist Nathaniel Shulker appears. I'll just make that a little bit larger. Who else gets applause 105 years later? After he left the boys' orchestra when it was dissolved about 1903, from 1904 to 1915, he was a member of most of New York's finest musical organizations, such as the New York Philharmonic. Here's a 1908 program from the New York Philharmonic, and listed among the orchestra members in the clarinet section. Let me just bring up the clarinet section over there. Is Nathaniel Shulker is one of the clarinet players. He was also a member of the Metropolitan Opera Pit Orchestra, Victor Herbert's Orchestra, the bands of Sousa and Pryor and Goldman. He was the rehearsal pianist for Walter Damrosch. And as I mentioned before, he joined Victor about 1915. I've already talked about his work in the foreign department, but he was actually active in just about every department that Victor had. In particular, as early as 1921, he was giving orchestral accompaniment to the opera star Beniamino Gigli. And throughout the ensuing years, he recorded for practically every one of the top operatic stars of the era. He also made many Victor Red Seal recordings that were not operatic. Five of his recordings were eventually given Grammy Awards. And in particular, then, 1927 electric recording of Rhapsody in Blue by Whiteman's Orchestra was conducted not by Paul Whiteman, who walked off the stand in a huff, but by Nathaniel Shulker. 1928, the Gene Austin recording of My Blue Heaven was backed by orchestra directed by Nathaniel Shulker. In 1929, he made the premier recording with the Victor Symphony Orchestra of An American in Paris. In 1935, there's a six-sided album, Highlights from Porgy and Bess. One of the six sides was directed by Nathaniel Shulker. The other five sides were directed by Alexander Smolens. In 1940, Paul Robeson sang Ballad for Americans. Again, the orchestra backing this was Nathaniel Shulker. He was also the piano accompanist for Eck Robertson in 1922, one of the very first country music recordings. And of course, he's best known for his several hundred dance recordings and for his backing of all of the popular stars of the day as an accompaniment. His last major recording effort was for the CSAC Transcription Library in the late 1940s and early 1950s. He made a total of 260 transcriptions for the CSAC Library, and a selection, actually, of 26 of these appears in his autobiography in a CD that's enclosed with the autobiography. Nathaniel Schulkert was the conductor of choice for virtually all of Victor's new innovations. The first commercial Victor electric record, Both Sides, was conducted by Nathaniel Schulkert. This notwithstanding the fact that in the American Dance Band discography, he doesn't, Brian Rust's master book, it doesn't show his name on either side for the first commercial electric recording. The first multi-record album was conceived of, arranged, music arranged by, and conducted by Nathaniel Schulkert. In 1929, Victor wanted a demonstration record to show the quality of electric recording and the quality of their radio and recording record players. And the composition Victory March by Nathaniel Schulkert, conducted by Nathaniel Schulkert, was that demonstration record. Actually, the composition was made in February 1925 by Nathaniel Schulkert for another demonstration record, this one for convincing the Victor dealers that it was worth their while to switch from acoustic recordings to electric recordings. Early radio shows had live people on them, and among the first of the transcriptions, that is, records that would replace live people to be played on the radio, was Nathaniel Schulkert and a company he formed called the Schulkington Transcription Company, and I'll have more to say about that in a while. This was the precursor to the well-known Thesaurus transcription, and it was actually the motivation for the beginning of the Thesaurus transcription series. I see. Sorry, I don't know how much of that showed on the screen. On my screen, all four of these showed at once. Well, technological blips. Sorry about that. No, this is a new screen. See, on mine is you're only supposed to see one. The rest is supposed to be a deep, dark secret. But in this machine, well, my secret is lost. My thunder is stolen. It's well known that Victor issued its early 33 RPM recordings, not in the 1940s, but in the early 1930s. And the first commercial 33 and a third RPM Victor recording was the Victor Salon Suite by Victor Salon Suite Number 1 by Nathaniel Schulkert with his Victor Salon Orchestra. This recording predates by the recording date, at least, by about 3 months, what might have thought of as being the first 33 RPM, and that was the Join the Victor Artist Party record, also conducted by Nathaniel Schulkert. The first of the Victor radio broadcasts to be made using transcriptions was the RCA Radio Record Review, a sequence of approximately 15-minute shows recorded on discs. One of these discs consisted of Nathaniel Schulkert playing popular tunes of the day, and the announcer would then say, well, Nat, play it. And then on the Victor recording, it's played by, and they would name the artist for all of the songs he played. In another one of these recordings, he had a small talking part. Unfortunately, I don't have a copy of that. The remaining portions of this series consisted of just playing the actual Victor records and then telling the audience that they can have this program on their home if they just buy all these Victor records and play them at home. Victor's most popular artist was Enrico Caruso, who died in 1921 during the acoustic era. when electric recording came out, Victor wanted to have an acoustic background from of an electrically created orchestra and dubbed on to the original recording. This was technically a very difficult thing to do at the time. I think the first to try it was Rosario Bordan, and Victor wasn't happy with the results, so they sent the job to Nathaniel Shilkret, and in two sessions, there were eight recordings, so the Victor electrical recreations, as they called them, that were issued. Among the first group of Victor picture records, which again appeared in the early 1930s, one of these was by Nathaniel Shilkret. His picture was among those that appeared on the record. And for the Victor picture records, one and only one of them was actually made, two of these combined to make one Victor picture record, 33 RPM. And one of the two sides was Nathaniel Shilkret's picture record. In addition to having this extensive career as a recording artist, Nathaniel Shilkret had two other careers in music. He was also a pioneer in radio broadcasting. Commercial radio began in December 1923 with a very famous program, the Ever Ready Hour. By January 1925, Nathaniel Shilkret was on the air, and between 1925 and 1940, he estimated that he made over 6,000 radio broadcasts. He also had a career in motion pictures. He was paid separately to make recording, paid separately by Victor to make both synchronized and unsynchronized recordings for early pictures. His earliest was 1928. In 1935, he left Victor to become head of the music department, musical director for RKO Radio Pictures. And included in his scores for RKO was the score for Winterset, and that earned him a nomination for an Oscar. He was also the music director for two of the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers motion pictures, Swing Time and Shall We Dance. And here's a picture from Shall We Dance showing Nat Shilkret on the right in the company of the two Gershwins, Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, and standing at the left, it's the dance director, Hermes Pan, and motion picture director, Mark Sandridge. I'd like to conclude my presentation by playing for you the demonstration record for the Shilkington transcription that I mentioned before. Before playing the record, I'd just like to give a quote from the autobiography of Nathaniel Shilkret explaining what he had to say about the Shilkington transcriptions, referred to as Shilkret novelties. He said, NBC was using records instead of live announcing. Columbia started to make transcriptions that included commercials. I tried to convince RCA Victor to follow suit. Sarnoff did not agree, and so I formed a company with two other men and called it Shilkington Transcriptions. A combination of our three names. That would be Nathaniel Shilkret, Eddie King, and his brother-in-law, Lou Finston. When Sarnoff heard about it, he declared he did not want another company using RCA Victor facilities. He dissolved our Shilkington company and started the transcription company, which he called Thesaurus. Well, with this, I'll play the demonstration record that explains what the Shilkington transcriptions are about.
Shilkret Novelties on the air. For the first time in his long and successful career as musical director of the Victor Talking Machine Company and conductor of many outstanding radio hours, Nathaniel Shilkret has been prevailed upon to produce a series of sustaining programs for electrical transcription. Through this series, the orchestras, arrangements, and showmanship behind many of radio's most elaborate and successful programs are now available to radio stations everywhere to serve the advertiser who desires the best, but who cannot possibly afford such talent. Consider for a moment the following. Not one, but two orchestras. First, Nathaniel Shilkret's original Salon Orchestra. Second, his own 22-piece novelty orchestra, the Rondeliers, Gitla Ersten, soprano, and Frank Parker, tenor, in solos and duets, the incomparable Joe Green and his xylophone, Charles Magnanti, the accordionist, Del Stegers, world's greatest cornetist, Lou Raderman, violin virtuoso, Brodkin, the cellist, and the famous double piano team of Milton Rettenberg and Jack Shilkret. These stars and others never before assembled in any one series of programs stamp Shilkret Novelties as the most ambitious series ever recorded. The entire series is recorded on 12-inch discs at 78 RPM by Byers Recording Laboratory under the personal direction of J.G. Byers. You will marvel at the breadth and the color of the musical reproduction and the clarity of the diction. Leonard E.L. Cox, who collaborates with Nathaniel Shilkret in this series, has produced many of radio's most successful programs. Mr. Cox has drawn on his long experience as station manager and program director and has produced the first program to answer the varying needs of radio stations and advertisers. The first series of Shilkret Novelties comprises 13 15-minute programs. Each 5-minute disc is a unit to itself, but follows in perfect continuity with a preceding disc. Now, this means much to the station manager and to the local advertiser, for Shilkret Novelties may be broadcast as a 5-minute, a 10-minute, a 15-minute, a half-hour, or a full-hour presentation. And right here is another point, and a very important one. Shilkret Novelties has no name identification or long announcements that might detract from its use as a sustaining feature. On the other hand, when sponsored by a local advertiser, it can be instantly identified as his own personal program by following this simple rule. After the first few bars of music on part one, gradually reduce the volume to background level and cut through with the identifying commercial by your station announcer. Listen while we demonstrate how any program may be adapted for local sponsorship. Smalls Paint and Varnish Company offers you Smalls Novelties, the first of a series of musical programs personally directed by Nathaniel Shilkret. The program to which you have been listening has come to you through the courtesy of Smalls Paint and Varnish Company, makers of Duro-Gloss paint and Tylene, the varnish that will not crack or turn white. Next Wednesday at the same time, Smalls Paint and Varnish Company will be with you again with Nathaniel Shilkret in another Smalls Novelties. And now for the program which releases for the first time to radio stations everywhere, Nathaniel Shilkret and his music in Shilkret Novelties.
A discographer's dream, a record that explains what everything is all about. I'd like to thank Art Schifrin, who made the transfers for the music that I've played today. I'd also like to thank my better half, who prepared the PowerPoint presentation for me. At this point, Smalls Paint and Varnish invites you to ask whatever questions you have.
Multi-record sets that predated that. In the Music Arts Library, one of them was Staccato. Tchaikovsky's first Dvorak New World Symphony that was done in 1925? Oh, I'll start over. Hello?
Hello? Okay. You had mentioned that the Victor Herbert album,
right.
C1, was the first Victor multi-record album. There were multi-record albums in the Victor Musical Arts Library that predated that. One of them was the Tchaikovsky-Dvorak New World, the first version he made in 1925, very early in the electric era,
right.
That was issued with acoustic-style labels. There were even some acoustic sets in the Musical Arts Library that predated that.
And they were issued as an
album? They were issued as albums, yes.
Well, I stand corrected then.
What I would amend that the other albums were one continuous piece of music and belonged as a set, whereas this was a concept album where you had different songs that were unrelated except for the fact that they were all by the same composer. So that is a different type of album than the symphonic albums.
Thank you. I accept both the comments and the defense for me. If there are any more questions, we'll take the defense first and then the comment. Go ahead.
Just a biographical detail that you omitted, or maybe I missed. When did you say that Shilkret was active into the early 50s? Doing the CSAC recordings. When did he actually die?
1982. At age 92.
I saw variations on the name of his spelling. Can you elaborate
on that? Yes, it evolved through the years. The original one had an umlaut, Nathan Shilkraut. Actually, his birth certificate says Nathan, N-A-T-A-N. I'm pretty sure that's simply not a typographical error, but a writographical error in the birth certificate. Very soon, very early on, the umlaut was dropped, and the early days was Nathan Shilkraut, S-C-H-I-L-D-K-R-A-U-T. Then the A-U became an E. And then about 1919, when it was unpopular to sound Germanic during World War I, the C and the D got dropped. And when he changed it, the whole family changed their name. And his in-laws, which were originally Finkelsteins, they changed their name to Finston. I think this was next.
I don't need the microphone. Was it Whiteman who conducted the first Rhapsody of
Blues? The acoustic version? Yes, it was. Yes. And Whiteman was scheduled to conduct the electric remake. He had a disagreement. Well, there are actually a number of things that happened. He had a disagreement with George Gershwin at the piano. Whiteman was in the habit of picking up the tempo for his dance when he went on tour, and Gershwin conceived of the piece the way he originally conceived of it, and so there was a disagreement there. Also, there were a couple of people who were late, and I think he was irritated by the fact that two of his musicians weren't there. And Nathaniel Shilkret mentions also that the hall was very large and it was hard to control with the early equipment. I have only the comments in his autobiography on that. I can't adjust that. It was coming somewhere.
I don't know if Nathaniel was ever aware that he was at the center of a storm in Ireland when a record of the Irish National Anthem was used to close the national radio station.
Lieutenant Ridgely?
1926. But it was billed as the band of the Fighting 69th, one of the Irish regiments. But it was actually a Victor House band conducted by Nat Shilkret.
Actually, this was of interest to me. This is mentioned in Dick Spotswood's discography, but he doesn't give the discographic data, so I've been looking for that.
I have a copy of the disc. I'll give it to
you. That would be wonderful. I guess whoever gets the microphone gets to talk
I had a question. You said that the first time he's named in the Victor Ledgers or is found is 1917.
And that's the earliest I've been able to find at any rate.
But he said it was 1915.
Yes, he's consistently said he joined Victor in mid-1915.
Well,
and he's pegged the date, he said, about a year after he was married, which is June 1914. And his son also seems to think the same thing. He said, oh, it was shortly after I was born, which would be March 1915. I have no contracts, nothing to verify this, except that the family has consistently said that mid-1915 was the date he joined Victor.
Well, would it be possible then he was contracted as the house orchestra under Walter Rogers or Burdon or Eddie King during that period?
He was contracted by Eddie King. That's what he says.
So he was in the house orchestras.
He was hired specifically for the Foreign Department by Eddie King.
Okay.
The only thing I can't verify for certain is it really was mid-1915. He says it consistently in radio interviews, in his autobiography. It's mentioned, I think, in a Victor catalog at some point. But the earliest contract for him I can find dates much later. I suppose that you were in... Dick Spotswood had a comment, so if you could... Microphone.
Man serves the machine. Was the Rhapsody in Blue incident the one that precipitated Whiteman's departure from the Victor label? I know that there was a quarrel between him and Shilkret, but I've never heard the details of it. And two, maybe you could address his relationship to Fats Waller and those extraordinary organ solos that Nat seems to have mentored.
The first question was about the rift between Paul Whiteman and Victor. As director of light music and starting 1926, Nathaniel Shilkret was largely in charge of who directed what music. Most of the artists had to conduct what they were told to conduct. Whiteman was an exception. He got to direct pretty much what chooses music. The claim is that he was jealous of Nat because Nat picked the same stuff that he did. In particular, Nat did some recordings of George Gershwin pieces, and Whiteman felt that was his private domain. And so many people cite that. Nat, in his autobiography, mentioned as a possibility that that was why Whiteman left Victor. There was also another reason, though, namely that Columbia offered a very attractive salary, I think, of something like $100,000. And Nat Shilkret seems to think money was the most persuasive factor. And now the second question was... In his autobiography, Nat Shilkret mentions once they were having a special kind of session where they didn't have anything specific in mind to record particular pieces. He'd have his soloist improvise, and they would try to get a recording. And they were having some troubles getting something. And all of a sudden, Nathaniel Shilkret says in the background, they hear this organ. And it turns out it was Fats Waller with a jug of gin. And he invited him to join the session. And there is one Fats Waller recording with Nathaniel Shilkret directing. And to the best of my knowledge, that's the only time that Nathaniel Shilkret directed with Fats Waller. If he was instrumental in his career in any way, I'm not aware of that.
The January 1st, 1926 broadcast, the Victor Hour, Shilkret conducted, and recordings exist of three segments of that. Did he conduct the earlier ones? Did he conduct the January 1st, 1925 premiere program?
Yes,
the
he
Victor
did.
Hour?
In McCormick's biography by his wife, Lily, there's a picture of I forget if it's the program, an advertising flyer. They advertised extensively for that broadcast. And if you look in tiny, tiny print, you'll find Nathaniel Shilkret and the Victor Salon Orchestra appearing as part of that broadcast. So I guess I think my time is up. And if I don't give up gracefully, I get dragged off of the hook. So I thank all of you for coming. Thank you.
I think we have to switch computers here. So while that's going on, we have some important announcements from our conference manager, Kurt Nock.
Okay, first of all, we only have two more coffee breaks before the exhibit room is torn down. So be sure, if you want to do any business with our exhibitors, to go on in there and take care of that after this next lecture. Also, the University of Illinois Press sent in a bunch of books for their table. They'll be put out on the table very soon. And those books are also part of the silent auction, so be sure you go by. There's a whole table of new, fresh books. The silent auction will close at the towards the end of the afternoon coffee break, so be sure that you get your bids in on anything that you're interested in. Once that auction does close, we're going to want to get people checked out immediately after the last presentation today and before the business meeting. There is one of these things in your packet, Actionable Offenses, which is the CD counterpart to the lecture that Patrick Feaster and David Giovannoni are going to be giving this afternoon. If you want a copy of that free CD to go along with the lecture, you must get your form filled out and turned in to our Keyophone Records table this morning, okay? So go to the exhibit room and get that taken care of. And I think that's all I've got now. Go ahead.
Okay, Kurt. I just want to say, I have one copy of maybe half a dozen of Nathaniel Shulker commercially available recordings. Would it be possible I leave them with you?
Sure.
And Kurt also indicated that he had copies of the autobiography for anybody who's interested.
One quick thing. My fingers are very powerful. if you look at your schedule, you see that we're blessed by a very, very short business meeting today. I hope it's a blessing. But what that means is if you have business you would like to bring up when in the new business section of the meeting, I want to hear from you before the meeting so I can write you in and we can talk about how to get that in, because we're trying to get this done within a half an hour. This will be when our new officers are announced and we hear about the budget and things like that. But if you have some new business to bring up at the meeting, please see me beforehand. Thank you.